Okay, so now we spent some time. We did that panel discussion, if you will,
yeah.
And then we talked to
those guys.
A bunch of folks doing all sorts of cool stuff with solutions.
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about what are we going to talk about? Actually, before we do that, why don't we introduce who's here before we dive in?
Sure.
Go deep.
So I'm Andrew Bybee. I'm a program manager on the CRM platform team.
And you're off.
Nirav Shah, I'm a developer on CRM programmability.
Awesome.
Alan, I'm a program manager on platform team.
Excellent. So what are we going to talk about? Who's going to talk?
Well, we discussed this in our short panel previously. The features that they're going to introduce, some of the features that they're going to introduce are solution pack management in Zurich. The other thing that we mentioned, one of the fundamentals that we're working on in this feature, in this version, is code on server.
Right. So,
and how to write custom code in CRM online and hosted environment.
And you promised me you were going to talk about how you're going to keep it secure and not
yes.
allow people to touch other...
Yeah, we can go through the detail while we're doing a demo, and Nirav can go to the whiteboard and show exactly how we're going to do this. But one of the things we were looking at when we start breaking down the tasks, as I mentioned, to custom web apps, external reference services, plugins specifically for M1.
Workflows. Right.
One of the things was how those components, if they run in a CRM online or any hosted environment, can compromise the security and performance of other organization in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that we came up with was how we can profile the assemblies that are downloaded in our online environment or in hosted environment,
mm-hmm.
how we can trace those, how are we going to manage the security to allow them to do certain things, to perform certain tasks. And one of the things that we started thinking about was using code access security to limit the privilege of the execution on code on server assemblies.
So what's code access security? How does that work?
Basically, code access security, the way it works is it allows us to, we can set the limit of execution level and executables in the environment by limiting.
And that's something you get with .NET?
Yes,
yeah, I mean, the ideas aren't new, right? I mean,
no.
Part of what we're trying to do, I mean, Rob, you know, used to work in BS, and so he's spent a fair amount of time with how to put some of this stuff together.
Yes, yes.
The concepts aren't new. Part of what we were looking, though, is we're trying to understand, out of all the places that you can extend sort of the solution that you're putting together with CRM,
uh-huh.
where are the places where it makes the most sense to try and run that code on the CRM server itself?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Right? And so that's where we were really, really trying to sort of target what we're calling sandbox,
yeah.
which is really just a sort of an implementation around sort of some of the what we call partial trust in terms
yeah.
of .NET.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, but we also are trying to sort of combine different types of models for being able to restrict logic.
The other thing is, the better is actually, we can look at it also in an isolation level.
Yeah.
There are physical isolation levels and logical isolation levels.
Uh-huh.
So physical isolation level, you can look at the sandbox, and we can go through the detail later, as the components within the sandbox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Logical isolation is actually the code access security that is already existing in .NET that we're taking advantage of.
So are you just using .NET, or are you adding more to what the .NET
you
folks are giving you?
Yeah. So we actually spend a lot of time thinking about how to layer different securities. So the first layer that we use is kind of the .NET code access security layer. Then we build on top of that and use the Windows security. So as Alan was talking about, you know, we've isolated the code onto its own machine, potentially, if you want.
Uh-huh.
And then we can use Windows security to really lock down the account under which the code runs, so it doesn't have database access and can't really go outside the environment in ways that you'd expect. Then we also add a third layer for the multi-tenant environments where you can actually secure all the code to run per tenant so that one tenant's code can't interfere with the other tenant's code. So
Can't grab too much CPU, can't grab
exactly.
too much memory.
So on top
right.
of that, we've got what Alan was mentioning as kind of the monitoring or profiling of the code that's running. So we actually, you know, examine what's going on for each tenant, which assemblies are doing what, and
mm-hmm.
build up profiles around the code and what
mm-hmm.
they're doing
mm-hmm.
so that we can keep track of who's trying to harm the system or, you know, use too much of the processing power that we've got and not giving other tenants an opportunity to do what they need to do.
Not just malicious, right? I mean,
exactly.
it could be
right.
just a bug.
It could be
poorly written code.
Yeah.
Poorly written code. It
uh-huh.
could be perfectly fine code. It's just doing a lot more intensive operations than what we intended it to do.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that's interesting about sort of the pattern in CRM that you see more on the database model side is it's not just about, you know, process utilization and things like that. It's also about, you know, looking at what kinds of database queries are you running, what kinds of system access requests are you actually making. In our model, we don't really expect that most components would actually be looking at anything on the file system, for example, right? They would expect to simply be looking at us as an operating environment, not necessarily at a as a full, you know, computing environment with a file system and whatnot. So
you block that completely.
Right. So I mean, those are the kinds of things that, again, you know, .NET gives you some capability for that, and that's when we think about what we call sort of partial trust. That's part of where that comes in, is you're saying this code can execute, the runtime will sort of take care of certain capabilities, but it can start to block out other things like file system access or native code access and things like that.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So how do we want to go? Do you want to show me on the whiteboard?
Sure, I can kind of walk through kind of the process that gets used and how the different layers of security are.
Okay.
So, you know, if you look back at what we've got in CRM 4.0 and things like that, you've got the SDK that hangs out, and in the SDK you can implement your iPlugin interface, and that's basically how you go about extending the functionality of the SDK. We call it sometimes the eventing framework. So it basically provides a mechanism to listen to the activities happening in CRM and kind of plug in custom logic, hence the term plugin. So what we've done is we've just we were thinking outside the box for that name. But what we've done is we've just basically extended this functionality to kind of let you run this partial trust code. So all we've done is we've introduced kind of this new box, and I'll draw it down here, what we call the sandbox. And we've introduced a new interface that you can implement that's isolatable plugin. And as the name implies, it's a plugin that can be isolated to run outside of the SDK box itself. And what we do is, if you implement this interface, when the SDK encounters an event handler that needs to get executed isolated in an isolated mode, it'll actually call out to this box to what we call the sandbox hosting service. And the sandbox hosting service is essentially just the manager for the sandbox server itself. It's going to keep track of the different organizations or tenants that are running on the sandbox server. It's going to do that monitoring that I was talking about earlier about, you know, who's using excessive resources and things like that, and just kind of communicates with the SDK and tells it to, you know, how to keep track of the activities that's going on here. So this guy just, you know, goes out and finds what we call a worker process that, and we basically have one per tenant that actually does the execution of the plugin. And inside the worker process, I'm going to blow it up out here so that we can look into the details of what's going on inside the worker process.
It's like an electron microscope in white.
So, I love it.
So just like any .NET process, there's always the default app domain. And in there, we've got some code that basically is actually going to handle the execution of the isolated plugin. So this guy just, what it's going to do is it's going to spin up a new app domain. So for the plugin, so we'll call it the plugin app domain. And this one's actually an app domain that's got the code access security enforced on it. So when we spin it up, we tell it, you know what, any code that runs in here, we want it to run in partial trust. Only give it these set of privileges, and only let it do these types of actions.
Right.
So it's going to spin up that guy, it's going to take the plugin assembly, and it's going to actually load the isolatable plugin in here. And excuse my handwriting for being sloppy.
Got it.
I'm used to writing in Visual Studio, not on the whiteboard. So this guy is going to go ahead, instantiate the isolatable plugin inside this domain, and then it's going to actually tell it to execute. This guy can then call happily back into the SDK and make whatever take any actions it wants against CRM, so it can start building up, you know, the richer custom business logic that they want, kind of build up the the entities in a manner where they link to each other and kind of, you know, implement their business rules the way they need to,
uh-huh.
and just, you know, happily move on and do what they need to.
And that's probably worth noting. I mean, that's probably worth noting in terms of that sort of application pattern. When would you write a plugin versus when would you write
right.
something else,
right?
Right. Typically, when we see business logic, when we talk about the message pipeline, a lot of what we see people doing is it's about their opportunity to get in as the message is happening. So
right.
let's say I go to create an entity instance, right? I want to create a new account, 123.
Right.
And let's say you've got some rule in there that says, hey, before you create that account, I want to check to see if the following sets of information are correct, and maybe I want to check to see if there's some other duplicate for something, or maybe I want to go up to some external service and get some other set of information, bring
sure.
that back, and populate the record later.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, we see those types of things happening all the time, and I want to make sure all that data and manipulation happens before the record gets committed, for example.
Right.
So part of what we see then is you know, the CRM server is really the only place that you're going to get the visibility and the transactional consistency for those types of operations. And so when people are writing these plugins, typically they're focused more at what's happening in CRM
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, sort of go run any sort of arbitrary code. So we're more focused in terms of our security boundaries and things like that on how we can help focus you in on accessing CRM
right.
and doing that in a sort of safe, secure way and not
right.
so much about sort of running any
now,
random code.
So the version 4 doesn't have any of this, obviously. CRM 4 doesn't have
any. Well, version 4 has plugins
right.
and it has the ability to run them, but it's basically a full trust
model.
Sure. So if I've written a plugin for version 4, will that same plugin work in version 5? Or do you have to now adapt your plugin so that it works in this partial trust mode, whether you're on premises or hosted or online?
Short answer is yes, but
yeah. So the answer is yes. So the plugin, if you have a CRM 4.0 plugin,
uh-huh.
it'll continue to execute, but it'll only
uh-huh.
execute in full trust. If you want to have it run in partial trust, you have to basically just implement the new interface and ensure that your code can handle being run in partial trust.
So obviously we are encouraging ISVs or developers to move to the partial trust model mm-hmm. so that their applications can run in any one of the
exactly.
three.
This is the start of us encouraging them
yes.
to do that, yes.
The other thing Andy mentioned also was the ability right now in CRM 4, part of CRM 5, part of writing custom code for CRM 5 is ability to these custom plugins to participate in CRM transaction, which was non-existent before.
So tell me more about that.
New
so
concept, yeah.
It's a new concept. So let's say as Andy's scenario, or actually the scenario that we have that I'm going to show you.
Would you want to show it?
Yeah,
why don't we do that?
Yeah. We've been talking too long
yeah.
without showing code, so let's do that.
I need to log in.
Let me get off.
Do that for you?
All right. We're doing a close-up of your back here, Alan.
All right.
Notice the fine pinstripes.
So the scenario here is that we have a basically parent-child relationship between two entities. We have a main custom entity called
uh-huh.
project,
uh-huh.
and we have work item entity that can be added to the project.
Okay.
Now, what we want to do is basically, if we're going back to CRM for any kind of programming model,
mm-hmm.
if I have to take care of and clean up for the child-parent relationship,
uh-huh.
I have to do lots of stuff in my code
right.
to make sure if, for example, something went wrong when creation or parent object, my child object doesn't get created.
Uh-huh.
If the update happens, the parent object need to be informed and does the necessary action.
Mm-hmm.
So before this, everything, the onus was on the developer to make sure that cleanup is happening in the code.
Uh-huh.
Right now, with the interface that we provide and with the steps that we added into plugin registration, we can take advantage of that and then put our plugins and components into transaction with the minimal effort.
Okay.
Basically.
Show me.
So I just wanted to show you the code first of all.
Caveats here, though, are that obviously, you know,
this is
a very early build.
Very, very early.
That's what Channel 9's about.
That's right.
Don't be shy.
Show me
the good stuff.
So I'm going to show you the code. Basically, we talked about this in our initial panel.
So hang on. Let's see where we are here. So we're in Visual Studio.
Yeah, we're in Visual Studio. I'm going to show you the initial
project.
Yeah. I'm going to show you.
You went too fast.
No, this is the same
project.
This is the same project.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, okay. So what are you showing me here?
So the number one is, as Nirav mentioned, isolatable plugin.
Right.
This interface allows this plugin to be registered in Sandbox or outside Sandbox.
So you have a create project class
mm-hmm.
that's isolatable.
Isolatable plugin.
Got it.
And this is very basic. The other thing that you notice, the iService provider is introduced new.
And what does that give me?
So that's one of those nice new things that we've done. So if you look back to the CRM 4.0 plugin interface, the iPlugin actually passes you in an iPlugin execution context. We've decided that we're going to move away from that and use the service provider model, which is a more standard model across extensibility applications. And it really lets us kind of add new functionality as we invest over multiple versions of CRM and let you kind of update your code when you want to, when you get around to it, without being broken each time we release a new version of CRM.
Okay, great.
And the other new thing I'm going to change to another class in this project, we talked about it in our panel also, part of the code on server, allowing assemblies to be deployed in code on server, does not give the feature for customers, for ISV developers, for CRM developers to debug. So what else, the other thing that we did was this eye tracing service. With this, I can basically allow tracing and put tracing information in my plugin, as you see here, creating CRM, do the steps, and go to exception part.
So what does that? I mean, does that allow me to put a breakpoint into my code, and or you're just actually tracing, creating a log?
It creates a log, and also once this exception happens, this will show you. I'm going to show you through the demo.
Okay, so you got an exception here. You're throwing, kind of hard to see the colors here, and then you just got an error. Okay, got it.
So basically, this solution has three classes. Create project basically comes up and creates a project. If you give it a demo, if you give it a name, it will instantiate with the name. If not, set up a default name for the project. Update project looks at the work item, and based on the work item, updates the project hours. And the other thing is create
Map
to project. So this one, once the work item is created, it maps it to a project. If it doesn't exist, it maps it to a default project.
So the real world scenario here is that imagine I'm logging some stuff and I may have forgotten or not entered in some information that I needed to, and you want to make sure that information gets actually created and plugged in before you try and commit the record. We're giving an example with projects and tasks here. This could just as easily be a sales order and some
Kind of item. Common scenario.
So the other thing I wanted to show you also was the plugin registration, that where these
Have the plug. This is the plugin registration.
This is a new plugin registration. So if we look at the, let me take a look at one. Show you the step. So if you notice, this step is on new project created. And it's going to be before the transaction. It's before the object is created.
So I'm running this tool on the client side. And what does that do then? Is that what's going to deploy my plugin to the server?
So let's get away from this. And you see the create new work item also. There's another one that basically, again, as a primary entity is a new work item. And it goes inside a transaction. This is the part that is interesting, and I want to show you.
So that's new, right? That in CRM 4.0, imagine that the only things you would have had would have been the first and the last
pre
option.
Pre and post. Yeah.
So pre-inside. I don't know what that means, so you'll have to walk
me through that. Pre-stage of creation inside of a transaction. So this is inside a transaction.
In the okay.
So what happens is this basically goes through a transaction pipeline and it checks other information before committing this to the database.
So you have a lot of options here.
So if we go to our project, I'm going to go create a new project.
So you've already deployed?
I've already deployed. Everything is here. I'm going to create a new project. Let's call this PDC demo. And I'm going to put the total budget hours for it for $120. And one thing I'm going to show you is I haven't specified the company. The create project will take care of it, the plugin, that put the default company name. Now I'm going to close this.
What that plugin does.
The plugin does.
Okay, got it.
Now I'm going to go and create a work item.
Early software.
So we're still working on perf, I think. Didn't pay your license fees, man.
That's right.
So I'm going to create a work item. And let's say the work item is demo. And I'm going to find my project that I just created, PDC. Hook up to it. Good to go. And I'm going to put some hours. This is basically happy path of this transaction going through. And I'm going to save it. Everything is fine. If I go back to my project,
there's a refresh there. That's not.
If I go back to my project,
there we go.
You will see the PDC demo.
So you should have work items there.
20 hours added.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's an example there specifically where you're basically having to do some recalc.
Yeah.
Right. You actually want to look at total hours, much like you would say, I want to calculate a total price based on line items being added into it.
Right.
So
got it.
Here's the interesting part. This is basically the happy path. Everything is fine. I know
good.
The project. I know the work item. I added things.
Happy's good.
Happy's good. We like to be happy. So you're closing that one. You're going to create a new one?
Closing that. I'm going to create a new work item now.
We're going to create the sad one.
And I'm going to create a sad one.
Okay. You should add a pick list item for that.
Yeah.
Sad. Sad
so
path.
In this one, let's call it sad.
Okay.
And project name, I'm going to pick it up again.
Okay.
Okay. PDC. PDC demo. Now, let's say I'm busy. I forgot to put my hours. Just click save.
Okay. So what happened there?
What happens is because this is part of transaction and is looking at the parent, which is object, which is project object.
Yep.
It wants to update it. And if
so this is the exception that
this
you
is
put,
the exception
that you put right in the code.
Yes.
So it's not an error. It's actually an exception.
Yeah.
That you raised.
Yes.
Okay.
So if we look at the code here. You will see it's coming from here. What happens is trying to calculate the hours and add the hours here. And notice this is basically built on work item. This is registered for work item creation.
Right.
And what happens is during this time goes to do the calculation, doesn't see it.
There's no hours.
There's no hours.
So it raises that exception.
Raises that exception and it's not created.
Okay.
Notice that it was rolled back.
So the entire transaction got rolled back. And that's because you were in the
within the transaction.
And you were able to do that. Okay, that's pretty sweet. Now, what about debugging? You talked about tracing and
yes,
so on?
Yes, that was the window is basically, this is...
Oh, so that was your trace. Oh,
yeah,
I see.
That
okay,
trace.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what else do you want to show me?
For now, that's it.
That's it? That's enough? Okay, excellent. So... developers, so what's the message to developers, whether they're on CRM today or .NET today? The guys that are in CRM today have some thinking to do in terms of what they want to do with their code.
Yeah, so I think the big things are today we've got a plugin model. People obviously have an opportunity to run that for our on-premises deployments that are partner-hosted, and if the partner chooses to support it. We don't support plugins running on our servers, and Microsoft runs CRM Online. Part of what this unlocks is this gives you the ability to now start doing that. So even if you're running against the Microsoft-hosted service, you're able to actually register your plugins and have that business logic run exactly the same way that you were doing it with on-premise before.
That's one of the interesting points that Andy brings up, is exactly the same way. It's write the code once, run it across any of these deployments.
Right.
It's not, I have to do it differently for CRM Online and then do it one way for, partner hosting.
Right.
So you could be, we just saw Umberto talked about solutions and all that stuff. So you building solutions with those plugins that you then can deploy.
And the solutions deploy the plugins as part of that. And so part of the sandboxing behavior here says that now if you've got the permissions to actually install solutions into your organization, you know, you can then extend that to allowing plugins to come in as part of that. So if you're a partner writing an app, it now means you can sort of bundle all your stuff together without having to write an MSI for that.
That's sweet.
Right. And without having to maintain the MSI and sort of think about, oh, okay, well, this has to get sent to the, you know, the server admin, and the server admin has to take this down and install it and think about, oh, well, what if I'm running a server farm and I've got to think about putting, you know, bits in different servers and imaging and et cetera, et cetera. So it
just takes care of all that.
It just takes care of all that sort of stuff. And again, I think that, you know, again, part of this is just about the power of choice. Part of it is about, you know, sort of building things very quickly and cheaply, right? Than you would if you were just doing ASP.NET straight development. You can still do great stuff there, but, you know, we look at it and say, you know, if your application pattern fits the kind of stuff we're trying to do and that we're enabling, you know, we think it's a pretty strong choice for people to sort of provide a pretty substantial portion of what they want to try and build out and then use all the, you know, rest of the great tools that we're talking about and the services and things like WPF and Silverlight and Service Bus and everything else to then start, you know, pulling all that stuff together.
This is pretty sweet. I mean, we're kind of bulking up the platform pieces of CRM.
Yeah.
And so an ISV or a developer who's building something really doesn't really need to think about anything but the domain that they're focused on.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So if I'm building my manufacturing or financial services or whatever application, I worry about that domain.
Exactly. As a developer, I just wanted to be worried about the logic of what I'm trying to do. Yeah. Rest of it should be taken care of.
Right.
IDEs, right?
Right.
This is not an IDE, but it's a platform that you can build on. You have the building blocks. You just use it, implement your logic, and should be good to go.
I think in a lot of respects, it's like, it's sort of a similar story if you think about this in relation to what we've done with workflow, and then also in relation to what we've done with security, right? Which is basically, there are some areas where if you're building something from scratch, mm-hmm. you can either choose to not do anything in those areas, or something very sort of constrained,
right?
Or you can spend all your time trying to build out similar capabilities, but then you're not building the cool stuff that you're going to get paid for.
Yep.
Right. So a lot of this is about, you know, giving people opportunities to build stuff that they're going to really see as the value and the differentiation and ultimately get paid for.
Yeah, I love it. So I don't think we've seen all of CRM 5 yet today, right?
No,
so we saw only a small portion. Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty exciting. Thank you for showing me.
Hey.
I know I'm going to be back in a few months. We're going to see some more of that.
We'll talk more, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thanks,
guys.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.